The following content originally aired on the Live and Local program, which airs every weekday morning from 9 a.m. to noon on WKVT AM 1490, your source for news, talk, and the arts. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you for listening. Back again on the Live and Local program, WKVT AM 1490 and 100.3 FM. I want to thank Champlain College for being a sponsor of Live and Local. Their PATH program for adults is a faster, affordable approach to online degrees that gives adults credit for experience they already have. Learn more about how you can save time and money with PATH by visiting them online at online.champlain.edu. Spending the first part of the 10 o'clock hour getting to know a new practitioner practicing both at Putney Family Healthcare and Brattleboro Internal Medicine, John Todd, in the studio with me. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me in.
Appreciate you coming on. In the midst of you writing a two-part column, I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying after part one was head colds, part two this Friday will be chest colds. They're really part and parcel of the same thing, I would imagine. Although, how do you distinguish those as a medical professional?
Indeed. What I'm looking for is sort of where do patients point when, if they come in, they say they have a cough. Where are they pointing at? Are they pointing deep down in their chest, or are they just, say, clearing their throat? How did it start? What were the first three symptoms that came on? Did it start with a sore throat? Did it start with sinus pressure? Usually the nasal congestion is what points me towards a head cold, and the deep down, deep within the chest, can't clear the junk out. That would be the chest cold.
Now, for me, and I was joking with you off the air, I wish you were here a couple weeks ago when I was having a hard time getting over a cold, and it was in my chest. Normally, I get colds that originate and stay up in my head, nose, sinuses, things like that. And I've always just kind of thought that different individuals are more susceptible to different types of colds. Some people, like my father, always gets them in the chest, never seems to go up to the head. Is that the case? Are some people just more susceptible for these colds originating in one place versus the other?
I do find some people talk about a pattern of how it always gets them. It always gets them at a certain time of year. It always comes on like this and goes either straight down into their chest or settles into their sinuses and stays there for a week or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So is there something to that, or are they just sort of, that's just an individual thing? I mean, is there actually a difference between head and chest colds based on a person's own individual physiology?
I think for a lot of people, head colds go on to become chest colds.
Uh-huh.
And some of that, what I try to introduce to patients is that we all make mucus. We all make, hopefully, thin, watery mucus in the same way that our salivary glands make saliva just to keep our mouth and throat moistened. Our sinuses make thin, watery mucus, hopefully, just to keep all of the airways moistened. When we come into irritants or we get what's going around and that starts to thicken up this mucus, and that's a protective response. So what I'd encourage people to think about doing is are there some things to do in the first couple of days of this thickening of congestion, whether it's the sinuses or whether it's down in the chest? Are there some simple things to do in the first couple of days of that?
Mm-hmm. And so what would some of those recommendations be? You put a lot of these in your articles. Tell the listeners what those would be.
Well, one of the most basic things is for a lot of people, their first symptom that they're feeling basically unwell is a sore throat. And that's about the mucus draining back down the back of the nasal passages and irritating the back of the throat. Warm salt water gargles, like a half teaspoon of salt in 4 ounces of water. Gargle and spit. The good news about salt water gargles is you don't have to leave the salt back there. You can just gargle with plain warm water after that. Doing that 2 or 3 times a day, it's a very safe and natural anti-inflammatory, antibacterial thing to do. Another thing I talk about is drinking plenty of fluids. And some people insist on drinking like the fancy purchased beverages. And I say save your money. If it's a sugary beverage, the Gatorade, like sports drinks, water it down at least 1-to-1, if not 1-to-2. Stretch your money at least twice, if not 3 times farther. It's about getting the fluids in, not about getting the sugar in. Mucus glands don't do well with a load of sugar. They really want the hydration to help them out.
Yeah, and hydration obviously being an operative word in these situations. I've also often heard about avoiding drinks with caffeine because that tends to dry out your sinuses. Is that true, or avoiding cheeses?
If you love coffee like I do, what you have to do is balance it out. A glass of water for every cup of coffee is a good way to try to stay ahead of that.
That was the hardest part of my cold, is I actually stopped drinking coffee for about 10 days.
The headaches come on. Yeah.
And then, yes, indeed. It's great to hear you immediately sort of prescribing some more natural approaches to things rather than going right to the over-the-counter medicines. But do they do play a role in terms of helping you get over colds, or at least alleviate the symptoms of colds?
If you stand in the drugstore and you look at the over-the-counter cough, cold, flu remedy sections, what you're seeing is it's got to be 12 feet long of cough, cold, flu stuff. And some of these things are working at odds with each other. I do encourage one simple over-the-counter solution when you get thick congestion is look for a simple medicine called guaifenesin. It's available in long-acting versions in what might be branded as Mucinex, but the generic version of that works just as well. It's a 12-hour way to loosen up the mucus. Mm-hmm. Now, you also see, so that's the blue box version. You also see the red box, the green box, all of these other variations where if you look close on the ingredients, you're seeing decongestants, you're seeing antihistamines, you're seeing Tylenol mixed in there as well. All of those might have their role in some specific times, but by the time you mix all four ingredients, five ingredients together, you're trying to suppress a cough and dry out of the cough at the same time that you're trying to loosen up the mucus and get it out of your system. So to do all of that at the same time, I think a lot of these medicines, it's a $3 billion annual industry.
Kind of overpromising there, I would think.
Absolutely.
You won't cough, but we'll loosen up your mucus somehow, right, at the same time, magically. That's really where you start. This column that's coming out on Friday, I got an advance copy. When you start asking the question, when is it okay to suppress a cough and when is it okay to try and loosen it up? I guess it's really just based on your own social needs at a particular time. You don't, like right now, I wouldn't want to be coughing repeatedly on the air.
If you have to run a radio talk show, I guess I'll give it that to
You'll let me get a suppressant.
It's okay for you to suppress a cough to get through. I really say that if you're not sleeping at night because it's waking you up with the coughing and the hacking, then taking a cough suppressant is perhaps prudent. If you take also something that's loosening up the cough at the same time, in those occasions when you do wake up to cough, you're going to cough as effectively as possible. So the round-the-clock guaifenesin, that they call that an expectorant, is a sensible thing to do, and then a nighttime-only cough suppressant. If you're going through your day feeling like you've got to get to work and you've got to suppress your cough to get to work, I'm thinking most of your colleagues would rather they not be receiving what you're wanting to share with them with all of your coughing. So if you can take time off from work, very few of us have the luxury of being able to just shut down for 3 days. So we have to push on through. But if you have to cough, making it as effective as possible with hydration and also the expectorants.
Yeah. Now, the laryngitis that ensued from my cold made me run to the web to kind of just find other suggestions on things. And this was something that I learned that I didn't know and that maybe you could corroborate. Clearing your throat is actually bad for your sore throat. It actually exacerbates the laryngitis that comes from these things is what I was reading. I didn't know that.
You're scratching an itch. The little laryngeal folds there, it's very delicate tissues. Your vocal cords are just a little bit larger than the size of a dime altogether. So if you imagine you get a little inflammation there, you're going to feel a lump or something in there. So you're going to be tempted to cough and scratch that itch. It's like the mosquito that bit you 4 days ago and you're still scratching at that spot. To be doing, again, some saltwater gargles, you're actually getting some anti-inflammatory right to that area of tissue. To carry water with you, and instead of coughing, just having a sip of water, see if you can get that, ease that itch just with sipping some water.
Makes sense. Now, colds are so common that a lot of people do try and treat it themselves with a lot of the remedies you're talking about, buying over-the-counter medicines. At some point, if they don't get rid of it, they call Putney Family Healthcare. They call Brattleboro Internal Medicine. Is it to their detriment to not go see a healthcare provider right away? Are there things that you can help them with if they make an appointment, actually go see you or in the early stages of a cold?
I'm very happy to see somebody in the early stages of a cold because there are some simple basic things that might not involve expensive prescriptions that can really help things steer things on a better track. And it might be something as simple as I giving you permission to not go to work tomorrow. You know, let me write you a note.
Right.
Let me write you a note to say, you know, Chris, can you give him a day off of work? And that's essentially good medicine.
Can you give me one with just an open date on it, and then I can just have it filled in and Xerox?
Including
it?
The trip to Hawaii.
Yes, yes, indeed. But yeah, I think a lot of people finally, they look at their healthcare provider as the last resort. I got to get some antibiotics. I got to go in there and get that. But if somebody just comes to you for an office visit, which with healthcare is usually covered by insurance, mm-hmm. I don't get into that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you can sort of say this is a severe cold or also locating the cold in terms of upper or lower respiratory.
I want a chance to listen to your lungs. I want a chance to listen deep down in to be able to reassure you that it doesn't sound as though you have a pneumonia. Or in the cases of some people with chronic health issues, I might need to step up and get a chest x-ray and say, you know, your lungs don't sound as I would expect them to. So if I can catch up with a person like that, with if they have chronic asthma or they happen to be a pack per day smoker for more than 5 years, they're not going to clear the junk out like others do. It doesn't necessarily mean that they need the antibiotics, the pill that yeah. will make them all better. They're probably going to clear this in 5 to 7 days. But if this has become an acute bronchitis or a pneumonia, to get prompt treatment. Other individuals, they have a harder time clearing infections. If you have troubles with your blood sugars, diabetes, for instance, you're going to have a tougher time kicking that out.
Yeah, and that's where building up that history, that medical history, is really helpful in terms of treating these things right away. John Todd is my guest. He's with Putney Family Healthcare and Brattleboro Internal Medicine. John is a local boy. We'll get to know him a little bit more when we come back on this edition of Live and Local. Continuing our conversation now with John Todd, family nurse practitioner, practicing both at Putney Family Health Care and Brattleboro Internal Medicine, both BMH Physician Group practices. John, we were talking off air when you came in. You're no stranger to Brattleboro. You grew up in this area.
I'm a BOHS graduate, class of 1980. After my family moved into Guilford back when I was 13 years old, I worked at the old Guilford Country Store back in the day. I did get out of town upon graduating from high school, although with a year off between high school and college, I remember getting a season pass to Hogback Mountain.
And that I remember. That's where I learned to ski.
That was the year it didn't snow for Hogback at all.
So was healthcare your journey from the beginning as a career path, or have you taken a lot of people do different things and end up in their chosen career?
Well, my mother was a registered nurse, so she was really a model for me in this. My father, working locally as a psychiatrist, was also enmeshed in the community as a caregiver. I didn't turn to nursing work until my early 30s, mm-hmm. and I really started at a level of essential caregiving as a nurse's aide, and that was both in local nursing homes, in home health care, and at Brattleboro Hospital. And it was while I was working as a nurse's aide at Brattleboro Hospital that I was getting a nurse's education down at Greenfield Community College. All things considered, I just kept going to school.
Yeah.
After 7 years of education as a nurse, I became a family nurse practitioner.
Well, what I've been learning about the profession of nursing is all these different opportunities that are arising for people who get their RN that didn't exist before. We've had Richard Fletcher on the program when Steve West, my predecessor, was hosting it, talking a lot about this family nurse practitioner. Talk a little bit about what that is, distinguishing it from an RN and from an MD.
Richard is a tremendous advocate for nurse practitioners. He's served at the state and national level on being an advocate for what nurse practitioners can do as primary care providers. It's fairly well understood that nurse practitioners give clinically appropriate and sound health care. We work as collaborating providers. As much as Vermont acknowledges that we are autonomous providers, we work very much in collaboration with specialists, so with everybody from physical therapists to the nurses in our office, and imagery for the radiologists, so conversations with them about what we're requesting in the way of imagery for patients. I find that the work of a family nurse practitioner is inherently the work of a a one-to-one caregiver where you're trying to understand how a patient is experiencing their health, their health or their lack of their health. And what I am in the habit of saying to a lot of patients is, I want you as the patient, as the person in need of the help, I want you to be a squeaky wheel. I want you to be telling me what you're experiencing so I can understand from your perspective in what ways I can help your health better based on my education as a nurse practitioner.
Yeah, and your background as a nurse, and I don't want to say this in a way that comes off as distinguishing it from an MD degree as them as a doctor not being less empathetic, but part of a nurse's training is listening to those needs and then applying, you know, on a day-to-day basis when you're providing care as an RN. It strikes me that there's a lot of things that translate into family care in the settings that you're practicing medicine now.
My experience as a one-to-one caregiver, both as a nurse's aide and a registered nurse, and in some ways as an instructor of nurses, I came to understand that how valuable the threshold is of coming into a patient's space and providing essential care for them. Just a little thing, I've got a patient coming into an exam room. They've taken off their shoes and socks so I can take a look at their feet. I'm in the habit of helping them with their socks back on, their shoes back on. I say jokingly, sometimes it feels like I work in a shoe store, but that essential act of caregiving, I think, is central to the way a lot of nurse practitioners work.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're practicing in both Brattleboro and Putney. How are you balancing that schedule? Are you certain days in one area, other days in the other location?
Mondays and Fridays, I'm at Brattleboro Internal Medicine, and Wednesday, Thursday, I'm at Putney Family Healthcare. It balances out very well. Interestingly, down in Brattleboro, I'm working with some individuals who I've known back since high school.
Yeah.
Tom Lewis there at Brattleboro Internal Medicine was my primary care provider when I was in high school locally, and I've known a number of those physicians since I worked at Brattleboro Hospital. And Richard Fletcher was a preceptor of mine.
Oh, Richard,
Before I first became a nurse practitioner.
Nice. Terrific. Bringing it back to what we were talking about in the previous segment and the subject of your columns in last week's Health Matters page of the Brattleboro Reformer, and this week too when we're talking about the respiratory issues, things that people maybe should have on hand. We talked about the salt water gargle. When they're choosing an over-the-counter medicine to have in their cabinet, are you looking for things that help get them through the day, help them sleep at night, a little bit of both? You know, what do you recommend they have on hand?
I do encourage patients to think proactively. When they come into wintertime, my column talks about that first bitingly cold day in the fall. A couple of things to have in the cabinet at home. If your primary care provider is okay with you taking an anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen or naproxen, that's something that anecdotally for some people in their first couple of days of coming down with a cold, an ibuprofen or a naproxen or a naturopathic anti-inflammatory can make a very good first step to getting better quicker. Mm-hmm. Most of these things are going to kick you around for 3 or 4 days. I get worried for those patients. They say it's always 2 or 3 weeks that kicks them around. That's why I'd like to see if they start with the salt water gargles when they first get the sore throat. You're actually killing bacteria with that, just grandma's medicine.
Yeah.
To also have in the cabinet a little bit of over-the-counter cough suppressant for those night times where you really need to get a good night's sleep, and it's that deep down in the chest cough to try to move things out. I'll reinforce that around-the-clock idea of a mucus thinner, guaifenesin. It's commonly available in the more expensive Mucinex, the blue box Mucinex, not the red or the green stuff. But that's just something to loosen up whatever mucus has settled deep in your sinuses or deep in your chest. That's a good thing to have in your cabinet as an over-the-counter. But do discuss these things with your primary care provider before planning on that being the go-to thing. And save your money. There's so many medicines available over the counter that have 4, 5, 6 different ingredients. Know exactly what you're getting and keep it simple.
Yeah. And I like you. You mentioned grandma's medicine. And it seems to me, and I don't know if this is a trend in healthcare nationally, maybe with nurse practitioners, maybe just here regionally, but there does seem to be a little bit more acceptance of grandma's medicine, some of those remedies, just a saltwater gargle, rather than running immediately to the drugstore to buy something. Where is that coming from? Is that part of a new wave of nurse practitioners? Or
in my first couple of years as a nurse practitioner, I worked in an ear, nose, and throat practice locally here with Dr. Rigi. And one of the things I was plugging into at that point was the value of the basic, like, get direct to the source. When it's about your sinuses, there's ways to use salty water. Some people refer to a neti pot. I'm in the habit of recommending a product store. Or it's called a Neil Med bottle. And that way you're getting salt water up into the sinuses. And this came about because somebody was anecdotally noting that people who happen to swim in the ocean get less sinus troubles, just as a study of population, than those individuals who are further inland. Vermont doesn't have much of a seacoast.
Not a lot of saltwater swimming opportunities in these parts. Got to get that neti pot. John, thanks so much for coming on the air. Really nice meeting you. Really nice getting to know you here. I hope it's not the last time we get to visit.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
All right. John Todd, practicing medicine at both Brattleboro Internal Medicine, Putney Family Healthcare. You can go to bmhphysiciangroup.com or bmhvt.org. Looked up his contact information for both of those practices. We have time for another break, and then we'll be back with more live and local on WKVT AM 1490 and 100.3 FM. They did
the samba so long, they all fell right. The preceding content originally aired on the Live and Local program, which airs every weekday morning from 9 a.m. to noon on WKVT AM 1490. You can get more podcasts by going to www.1490wkvt.com.